This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Book sales in this country are flat, and a poll released yesterday shows that one in four Americans did not read any books at all in the past year. Hardly great news for publishers, but many of them are finding new ways to try to reach an audience, including the once marginal and now thriving realm of audiobooks. As you probably know, the Harry Potter books that have been a wild success in print are also very popular audiobooks. They feature the voice of actor Jim Dale as all of the characters.
"No," he said loudly, his voice ringing through the kitchen. "No way." "I told them you'd take it like this," said Hermione with a hint of complacency. "If you think I'm going to let six people risk their lives because it's the first time for all of us," said Ron, "this is different. Pretending to be me." "Well, none of us really fancy it, Harry," said Fred earnestly. "Imagine if something went wrong and we were stuck as specky, scrawny gits forever." Harry did not smile.
Jim Dale reading from Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. New technology means it's possible to distribute audiobooks as computer downloads as well as cassette tapes and CDs, and low costs make it possible to distribute material that doesn't have to be a bestseller. Later on the program, Russia flexes its military muscles. We'll talk about what they're doing and why. But first, the rise of the audiobook. What are you listening to and why? What are some books better to listen to than to read? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Dane Frisbee Dart joins us now from the studios of WLSU in La Crosse, Wisconsin. She's an assistant librarian and an audiobook fan. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, thank you.
So why do you listen to audiobooks?
Well, I have to maximize my reading time. There's only so much time to read and devour all the literature that's out there, so I'm just multitasking.
I wonder, the first time, though, you pressed that little play button, and back when it was cassettes, I suppose, did you feel like you were betraying your book past somehow?
No, not necessarily. And like I said, I feel like I'm maximizing my reading intake. I guess I feel like there are some books I want to read, mm-hmm. Because it's a different experience when you read a book. You are using all of your senses rather than just, you know, you're listening. And you can multitask, do other things at the same time, so it's not quite the same experience.
I understand that at your book club recently, you confessed to listening to the selection under discussion rather than reading it. What was the reaction?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call it a confession. If it comes up, it comes up. But, the reaction was fine. They really don't care. We have a nice small group. I think it's my own mentality that I feel like mm-hmm. I'm possibly missing something. If it's a really good, you know, juicy piece of literature, I mean, I wouldn't listen to Brothers Karamazov on an audiobook. So, something intense like that, I really want to have the full experience with.
But maybe Harry Potter, that would be fine.
Yes, absolutely. Although I did read the Harry Potter that just came out, I just couldn't wait for it on audio.
Do you think that there are cases in which some pieces of fiction make better audiobooks than print books?
Well, I think that's a matter of personal preference, and for me, yes, absolutely. I prefer to listen to more of my guilty pleasure genres, like fantasy or sci-fi, young adult literature. I do kind of prefer those on audio, because I know I can get them done and get that in while I'm still reading something a little, you know, heavier, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And then there are just those books that are read by great readers that I would prefer to read. Prefer to listen to, such as the number one ladies detective agency by mm-hmm. Alexander McCall Smith. The reader on that, her name is Lisette Laquette, and she is just phenomenal. So I always recommend anybody that asks me in the library or anything, what should I listen to? That's the first thing I go to.
We're talking about audiobooks and their rise. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Let's start with Jim. Jim's with us from Spencer in Iowa.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a lot of the same feelings about books on tape and different audio types. I would hope that there are some type of awards that are being given out to some of the better readers, because I think, you know, that there's a really interesting artistic level of reading that deserves recognition in some way. But I think the books I enjoy the most are the unabridged, read-by-author type books. Mostly the books I listen to that the readers don't seem to be able to capture all the nuances of the author. And that can be a little frustrating. I'll just shut a tape off and give it away to the lending library, which is getting a pretty good-sized collection of those right now. But Cold Mountain, read by the author, Unabridged, that's excellent. Stones from a River, excellent read.
And Dane Frisby Dart, I know you, you just mentioned, in fact, a book read by a professional reader, not the author, but he's got a point when he uses the word unabridged.
Yes, absolutely. Personally, would consider it a travesty to read an abridged version. So definitely the unabridged is the only way to go for me. I mean, you're already multitasking. You're only using your audio senses at this point rather than holding and feeling and smelling and touching a book. You want to be able to get as much out of it as you can. So,
how do you feel about books that are being read with sound effects and music effects?
Produced, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't do so much for me. I think it's distracting.
It gives old radio producers work, I suspect. But
right, right.
Jim, thanks very much for the call. Dane Frisby Dart, your favorite would be the number one detective agency, ladies detective agency?
Well, yes, in the adult genre, but I got to go with Jim Dale for the Harry Potter series as well, and I do listen to all those numerous times. Any family trip we're going on, those are in the car. So for sure, those... got a couple of other favorites, but and it's interesting. There are a couple of different versions you'll run into, like with the Janet Ivanovich series, the Stephanie Plum series. There are two different readers. The abridged version is read by an actress, Lori Petty, and the unabridged version is read by C.J. Critt. And the Lori Petty is just unlistenable. So it's kind of, you know, those things. Those are things you discover as you get out there and start listening to things. And again, that was a recommendation by another audiobook listener. So,
Well, Dane Frisby Dart, thanks very much for being with us, and happy listening.
Thank you.
Dane Frisby Dart joined us from the studios of WLSU in La Crosse, Wisconsin. She's an assistant librarian and, as you heard, an audiobook fan. Joining us now is Robin Whitten. She's founder and editor of Audiophile Magazine, a magazine dedicated to audiobooks and audiobook listeners. She's with us from the studios of MPBN in Bangor, Maine. And nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Neil. I'm glad to be here.
And just to follow up on that first caller's question, are there awards for best audiobooks?
There certainly are awards. Audiophile magazine has a special category of golden voices for the best audiobook narrators in the business. And we also give earphones awards to recommended titles. And the Audio Publishers Association, which is the national trade association, gives the Oscars of audiobooks, which are the Audies Awards.
Now, I understand that you consider, if you listen to an audiobook, that you have, quote unquote, read it.
I have read it. I have read it with my ears.
Some people would say, that's not quite the same thing.
Well, I think we're talking about oral literature goes back a ways. And I feel that when I've listened to a book, I've really gotten everything that the author intended for me to get.
So you're going back as far as Homer, who, of course, recited the Iliad and the Odyssey long before anybody wrote them down.
Right. And that oral literature has been a respected form. I think we have a type of oral literature that should be and is respected by many people now.
How has the advent of the audiobook and the way they're distributed, because we mentioned earlier they're now computer downloads often as well as being sold on tape and on disc, how is that changing the industry?
Well, I think it gives audiobook listeners more choices. And I think one thing that's important to think of is that audiobook listening is a format choice for readers. So when we have more formats, we have more choices. And the format that people want is what's most convenient for them. So the advent of the iPod and MP3 players has made it a very convenient way to have your book with you all the time.
It's also that, though it's not really expensive to manufacture books, that's part of the reason the industry works, nor is it all that expensive to manufacture tapes or CDs, for that matter. Those costs, though, are not trivial. Once you've paid the narrator and recording engineer to make the cuts and produce the tape, as a computer download, your distributing costs are zero.
Well, that's true, but there, you know, you still do have those essential costs of the production. And as far as the cost of audiobooks, that's why we have libraries.
they can be expensive, but as you say, that's why we have libraries.
That's right. And libraries have been into audiobooks for a very long time. And I think that it's a format that is growing in circulation. The libraries across the country have expanding collections and including downloads at libraries. And, you know, they have always been great supporters of the audio literature format.
Here's an email from Judy. I started listening to audiobooks this year. I've listened to 6 or 7, from The Iliad, Great American Short Stories, to The March by E.L. Doctorow and The Good Husband of Zebra Drive. Listening is a different skill than reading. Sometimes listening seems slow, especially for crime fiction. I've always liked it being read to, so the reader is important. The Iliad is a good example. It should be read aloud. So Judy agrees with you, I think.
Yes, and I think that she's right that the reader is very important. And, you know, we have some great performers who read, but there are different styles. And, of course, listeners have different preferences about styles. Each one is a performance. And so you get a lot of variations, which is what makes it really fun.
We're talking about audiobooks. You get some of the best names in the business performing on these audio versions. The great Ruby Dee will be joining us in a few minutes. She performed the audiobook for Their Eyes Were Watching God. We'll see if she won't read a few lines for us and take your calls. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We got this email from Linda in Jacksonville, Florida. Several years ago, I was stopped for speeding and talked my way out of the ticket by explaining that I was listening to a really good mystery and got caught up in the story. The officer told me to enjoy the book, but please slow down. We're talking today about audiobooks. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Robin Witten is still with us. She's editor and founder of Audiophile magazine, and Ruby Dee will join us in just a minute or two. Let's go back to the phones, and this is Josh. Josh with us from Salt Lake City.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show.
Thanks.
I just wanted to, I guess, tell you what books I like to listen to. Obviously, the Harry Potters are my very favorites, but I like to listen to science books, like Brief History of Time or Pale Blue Dot, and you can actually conceptualize some of the things they're talking about without having to see it on paper, because I actually have A Brief History of Time in paperback. And you can flip to the back to see the equations, and they'll blow you away. But just listening to them, and
so you enjoy the Brief History of Time has been described as one of the most bought and least read books in history.
Yeah, I like listening to it. I've listened to it a lot of different times, several times, and each time I think I pick up on something new.
Robin Witten, but something dense like Stephen Hawking, is that good listening? Do you think? I guess it varies to the person, but.
I think it does, but I think that I've heard that a number of times, that the Hawking book is much more interesting than one would initially think at picking it up as an audio book. And certainly business books are terrifically popular on audio. Something like The Tipping Point or The World is Flat, a book like that, have been bestsellers on audio.
And when we're talking about, and Josh, thanks very much for the call. When we're talking about bestsellers, how many copies are we talking about?
Oh, I think you're asking the wrong person.
Okay.
what is a bestseller really tracks very much along the lines of the bestseller in print. And so Harry Potter is obviously a great bestseller right now. Some of the Janet Ivanovich book that Dane I think mentioned is way up on the bestseller audios. The James Lee Burke, The New Mystery from about post Katrina, Tin Roof Blowdown, and of course the books that have endured, like The World Is Flat, stay on the audio bestseller list a long time as well.
As we've heard, the narrators of audiobooks are extremely important. Today we're joined by an audiobook performer who's probably better known as one of our most celebrated actresses. Ruby Dee joins us from our bureau in New York. It's an honor to have you on the program today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And why did you decide to narrate an audiobook?
Why did I decide to narrate an audiobook? That's one of the things I do as an actor. I can't think of anything connected having authors speak through you. Mm-hmm. Anything more exciting, flattering, memorable than being the voice of an author that you respect.
How do you prepare to read an audiobook for that performance?
For the performance of their eyes while watching God, I had, I think I'd already done the Playhouse 90 mm-hmm. on PBS called Zora Is My Name. And that was instituted, that was because the head of the drama department at Howard University, Beanie Butcher, had asked my husband to stage a play Howard. And when after they discussed what should they do, they thought about Zora Neale Hurston, because she'd gone there as she'd been a student at Howard. Mm. And Ossie couldn't himself take part in the project, but to my great joy, he suggested me, because he knew how much I loved the work I'd read of hers. And so I got this chance to continue some writing I'd already begun, and I don't call it adapting Zora, but I got a chance to what I call walk the words of Zora and of some of the people who interpreted her and of some of the people that she wrote about, and to present her without getting in her way, without imposing any of my values or thoughts or that kind of thing, just present this extraordinary author. And that's what I think is so important to do with authors that teach us, that tell us things, that arouse us, that amuse us, that carry us to the next points in life. And that is, you don't interpret them really, as much as you step back and lend yourself to their speaking through you.
And when you referred to your husband, Ossie, of course, Ossie Davis.
Ossie Davis, yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you do us the great favor of reading us a short passage from Their Eyes Were Watching God?
Oh, yes. Let me see. A short passage from Their Eyes Were Watching God. To find one that is absolutely stunning. I wish I had everything you touch in Zora is astonishing, you know. But I'm thinking about the very last of it, the last of the stories. After Tea Cake, her love has been shot because she has killed him because of the flood. He has gone mad, and there was no remedy to save her life but to shoot him. And they'd gone to court. A lot of things had happened, and the funeral is over, and she goes back to the house where she and T-Cake had lived. And she's reminiscing. She tells her friend Phoebe, you know, two things everybody's got to do for themselves. They got to go to God, and they got to find out about living for themselves. And there was a finished silence after that, so that for the first time they could hear the wind picking at the pine trees. It made Phoebe think of Sam waiting for her and getting fretful. It made Janie think about that room upstairs, her bedroom. Phoebe hugged Janie real hard and cut the darkness in flight. Soon, everything around downstairs was shut and fastened. Janie mounted the stairs with her lamp. The light in her hand was like a spark of sun stuff, washing her face in fire. Her shadow behind fell black and headlong down the stairs. And now in her room, the place tasted fresh again. The wind through the open windows had broomed out all the fetid feeling of absence and nothingness. She closed in and sat down, combing road dust out of her hair, thinking. The day of the gun and the bloody body and the courthouse came and commenced to sing a sobbing sigh out of every corner in the room, out of each and every chair and thing. Commenced to sing, commenced to sob and sigh, singing and sobbing. Then Tea Cake came prancing around her where she was, and the song of the sigh flew out of the window and lit in the top of the pine trees. Tea Cake, with the sun for a shawl. Of course he wasn't dead. He could never be dead until she herself had finished feeling and thinking. The kiss of his memory made pictures of love and light against the wall. Here was peace. She pulled in her horizon like a great fishnet, pulled it from around the waist of the world and draped it over her shoulder. So much of life in its meshes. She called in her soul to come and see. And that's the end of the book.
Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Were Watching God, performed there by the great Ruby Dee. Let's see if we get a caller on the line. This is Mike. Mike's with us from Sacramento in California.
Oh, yeah. Hi, how are we doing?
Very well, thanks.
I just want to say I actually was in graduate school, and I failed my comprehensive exams the first time for literature, as a matter of fact. And I said, okay, I have to reevaluate what I'm doing and my study habits. And I was TAing. I was on the road a lot, and I was driving to and from different colleges. And my first book on the list I figured I'd tackle in terms of an audiobook was Their Eyes Was Watching, Were Watching God, as a matter of fact, read by Ms. D herself. And so that brought back a lot of memories, and it was wonderfully read, by the way. And to me, it was... by the way, I graduated with honors when I took the test again. Huh. I had such a vivid... imagination, and not to mention, you know, we can get in here and talk about multiple intelligence theory, and some people are auditory learners, and I must say I'm definitely an auditory learner. I'm a musician. For me, it was so vivid, and the details of these books that I was listening to were a moving picture in my mind as driving from various colleges, and it just was not only helpful overall and enjoying literature again, but most importantly, it made me actually find a good reason why I'm doing this, why I want to be a professor of literature, and whether or not you read it, and this debate whether you read it or whether you listen to it. I have to say, for me, it just worked out in the end. I'm a better listener, I suppose. I like the concept of being a child and being read to, and we all have these memories of going to kindergarten and the librarian picking the book off the shelf and all of us sitting around and listening. And I think, as the first member you had on was saying, you know, it's part of our culture, it's part of our folklore, and I definitely say it helped me out. And I don't want to take up too much time. I just wanted to say thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure to hear her read that section again, because it gives me goosebumps every time I hear it.
We can all second that, Mike. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. And Ruby D., I guess you've got a small piece of Mike's degree.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, that no other thing could make me feel happier, because I think that's what writers do for us. You know, we absorb them. They explain. They open up all the. They take the smoke away from the life pages. They make us see things, and that's what Zora does. She's. I remember somebody saying, I'd done this recorded. This for Harper, and they gave me a prize for it too. I thought it was wonderful, but it wasn't until somebody asked me, "Ruby, who were the other readers?" that I felt, you know, I had no idea that anybody could ever could mistake the fact that this was one reader here. But then, as I remember thinking and reading, when the characters opened up things in you. You became other people that she suggested. She made you recall. She made you heave up and unearth from your subconscious. Every kind of person and situation and nothing was foreign to this capacity to imagine and to hear and to understand. And that's why I love this business of books on tape, reading.
Our guest is Ruby D., the actor and audiobook narrator. Also with us, Robin Witten, editor and founder of Audiophile magazine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's see if we get another caller in. This is Marcus. Marcus calling us from Salt Lake City.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I just thought I would talk to you from the perspective of a former president of a storytelling group at the University of Oklahoma. And also, as a guy who reads to my wife on a regular basis, you know, we take selected books, mostly from, you know, like Terry Pratchett and John Conley and so forth, and take those and read them out loud. And one of the interesting things you were talking about, one of you had mentioned the oral tradition.
Yes.
And that was one of the things we highlighted in the storytelling group. Speaking as a member of the Cherokee Nation, things were meant to stay in oral tradition, according to that point of view. And once you write it down, you essentially kill the story. Or, you know, you kill the spell. There was a book about Cherokee magic that was written, and a lot of people came down on it because he essentially killed that medicine, I guess. And so, in a sense, the audio books, they're kind of bringing those back to life, just as I bring the stories to life as I sit down with my wife and I kind of read those.
Hmm. Robin Witten, it's interesting, Marcus, putting that in that perspective, that our oldest traditions are being revived by new technology.
Yes.
I think that's really interesting, and the Zora Neale Hurston is such a beautiful example, because there's so much dialect in the dialogue of the characters, mm-hmm. and you know, Zora heard all of that, and I think she wanted us to hear it. But when even a very skilled reader, when you see it on a page, I can't get it the way I hear it when Miss D reads this to me. And it's just an exceptional experience.
There are a few of us who would get it the way we would get it from Ruby D. I'll tell you that. Thank you so much for being with us today. Marcus, thanks for the call. Ruby D., again, an honor to have you on the program.
Oh, and I appreciate so much your allowing me to wrestle with these words and to become the instrument through which the magic of word music can do so much.
Ruby Dee joined us from NPR's yes. Bureau in New York. And Robin Witten, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you.
Robin Witten, editor and founder of Audiophile magazine. She was with us from the studios of MPBN in Bangor, Maine. Coming up, Russia sends strategic bombers back over the Atlantic and the Pacific and even makes a claim to land underneath the North Pole. We'll talk about what's going on in Russia and why they're flexing their military muscles. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.